League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to Football Full Circle, live right here on the Sports Grid Radio Network and Sirius XM, channel 159. I am Ben Stevens. He is Joe Lisi. Week number two of the National Football League season had a lot more chaos, and it continues with a doubleheader on a Monday night. Week number two, Lisi, ends with two games. It's a special Monday night doubleheader. We'll break down those matchups. We'll review week number two of this NFL season and talk some college football as well on today's show. A ton of football to discuss.
What a weekend of not just college, but the NFL. I mean, those games yesterday, Ben. I mean, Miami and Baltimore. Las Vegas, Arizona went right down to the wire. Comeback City, baby. I mean, unbelievable. And obviously, the news circulating San Francisco with Trey Lance going down and giving way to Jimmy Garoppolo. It's status quo in San Francisco. And now all things point to maybe a division title.
And we're going to look at how everything was affected yesterday, Joe. But let's start with Sunday night football because, like the Niners, the Packers were one of five teams entering the Sunday slate, Lisi, that had lost week number one, yet were favored by a touchdown or more to get their first win at least outright of this 2022 NFL season. And the Packers, as they often have over the last two decades plus or so, take care of business at home inside Lambeau against the Chicago Bears. Green Bay winning, Joe, 27-10 over the Chicago Bears. That line closed at 10.5 in favor of the Pack, and they even cover that lofty spread.
Yeah, we know about the dominance with Aaron Rodgers over the Chicago Bears, but it was the offensive line that got it done last night in Lambeau, right? Aaron Jones over 100 yards rushing. The 1-2 attack of Jones and A.J. Dillon just wore down the front seven, built up a big lead, and then held on, obviously, in the second half. But it was part of that in terms of the offensive game plan by Aaron Rodgers and the floor. But it was also the conservativeness out of Eberflus and the offensive staff in terms of Chicago not allowing Justin Fields to throw the football all but 11 times in that ballgame. I mean, at some point, you have to throw caution to the wind. You have to try and win these games as opposed to just losing by a close margin.
And we have seen them take that rather conservative approach, Joe, here through the first two games of the Matt Eberflus era. They're not really going to do all that many crazy things, especially in the opening half of football games, to try to keep games close. And frankly, they were kind of close late in that football game. They were down by two scores. Justin Fields just inches away from breaking the pylon, Joe. There was some conversation on the broadcast that the ball actually had broken the line, but they decide to keep the decision that he was just inches and maybe even centimeters short of that pylon, and I'm not sure it would have made a difference necessarily in the overall outcome of the game. The score might have looked different. The odds might have changed a little bit, but the Packers win pretty handily, 27-10, keeping us under a total of 41 in a hook as well. At least a couple of stats stand out to me. The Bears ran it for 180 yards. We saw David Montgomery average 8.1 yards per carry. That is certainly going to be the foremost focus focus of this Bears offense this year, because Justin Fields only threw the ball 11 times and only threw it for 70 yards as he was sacked 3 times. Now, Aaron Rodgers was incredibly efficient last night, Joe. 19 of 25, 234, and 2 touchdowns. But it was that ground game. Green Bay ran it 38 times, Lisi, for over 200 yards. Aaron Jones, 15 carries, 132. A.J. Dillon, 18 carries for 61 yards as well. It seemed to be the focus of their offense.
Yeah, and if you watch that game one in terms of Minnesota, when they fell behind 20-0 or 20-3, they got their touchdown in terms of the rushing attack. They were able to wear down Minnesota in the running game. Obviously, they couldn't close the door and pull out that victory, but that carried through into last night's action. And this is going to be something that I think you have to look at when you just break down Green Bay as a whole. Can they make a run into the playoffs? We know they had home field advantage for that game against San Francisco. Couldn't get it done, but if they can run the football like that in terms of the regular season with Jones and a heavy back and A.J. Dillon, they're going to be able to keep opposing offenses on the sidelines. So that's something to keep an eye out on if you're backing Green Bay or, more importantly, betting against them.
And the Packers' defense has looked very good here, maybe not in containing Justin Jefferson week number one, but certainly last night. By the way, Aaron Jones tied for the team lead yesterday in terms of receptions in that game. He only had 3, but that also was the most for Sammy Watkins and Randall Cobb. That was the most receptions given out from Aaron Rodgers, who found 9 different receivers yesterday, Joe, in that ballgame for the Green Bay Packers. So Green Bay covers as a 10.5-point favorite. The team that they are ahead of in the NFC North divisional odds, the Packers are the favorites at plus 110. The Vikings, with a plus 125 price, only 15 cents behind. Minnesota is on the road tonight in the second of the 2 games that we have on this Monday night doubleheader. The Vikings, a 2.5-point road underdog against the Philadelphia Eagles. Both of those teams unbeaten through their first week of the year, a perfect 1-0. We'll continue looking around the National Football League in the chaos we saw late in week number 2 of that Sunday slate. We'll do that next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We are back on Football Full Circle live right here on the Sports Grid Radio Network. He's Joe Lisi. I'm Ben Stevens. And as you just heard, as we came out of the commercial break, it was a chaotic week number 2 in the National Football League, Lisi. Dramatic comebacks across the Sunday slate, including the New York Jets down by 2 touchdowns, 30-17, Lisi, under 2 minutes left. And who leads the comeback for gangrene? Who else but Joe Flacco? The New York Jets storm all the way back to pull off the upset victory from the jaws of defeat in Cleveland, knocking off the Browns, Joe, 31-30, and winning outright as a 6.5-point underdog. Lisi, are you ready for this stat? Are you ready for this fact that I found yesterday? Joe Flacco now is 18-3 straight up in his career in the National Football League against the Cleveland Browns.
Yes. Now, a part of that, a big part of that, was the Baltimore Ravens and their physicality of the offense and defensive lines. But that's a great statistic. Ben Roethlisberger for years owned the Cleveland Browns, right? So Joe Flacco owns, obviously, Cleveland as well to a capacity, right? Think about that.
Yep.
Here's the thing. I don't know, and it was a dynamic performance by Joe Flacco. Can't take that away from him, especially since he couldn't get past midfield in game number 1 against Baltimore. But was that more of a testament to the Jets' offensive line protecting him and giving him time, or Myles Garrett in that front 7 not being able to just crash down on Joe Flacco, where you know where he's going to be, right? He's immovable. He doesn't move. He's there. He's basically a statue. So, I mean, are we more buying into the Jets' O-line and Flacco's performance, or the lack of productivity of the defensive front 7 of the Cleveland Browns?
It's a good point, Lisi, because if there was hope for Cleveland being able to have any level of success this season after the strange offseason they brought upon themselves, it was going to be because of how talented the rest of the roster was, especially defensively, because Myles Garrett entered this year as the preseason favorite to win Defensive Player of the Year. Joe Flacco threw the ball for 324 yards against them yesterday in total and 4 touchdowns. touchdowns. That's what Joe Flacco did, Lisey, in terms of the passing yardage against Cleveland yesterday. And as we look back at this football game, Nick Chubb finds his way into the end zone for his third rushing score of the day with just under 2 minutes left. It put the Browns up by 13 at that point. They missed the extra point, so it's a 30-17 game. Some went back, Joe, with 20-20 vision, saying that Nick Chubb should have just slid down at the goal line. They could have kneed the ball out from there. He also gave them a two-score lead, and when they were only up by a touchdown. I don't blame Nick Chubb. I blame that Cleveland Browns secondary. Again, Joe Flacco gashed them in two straight offensive possessions under 2 minutes left, and the Jets able to recover an onside kick. Garrett Wilson, Joe, a huge day. The rookie wideout out of Ohio State. 8 grabs, 102 yards, 2 touchdowns, including that game-winning score for the New York Jets with just seconds remaining in regulation. So that was one of the crazy comfort-behind victories, Joe, that we saw on Sunday. There was also your Miami Dolphins pulling off an absolute stunner in Baltimore against the Ravens. Joe, the Miami Dolphins were down 35-14. They were down by 21 points, 3 touchdowns in the fourth quarter, and they came back to beat the Ravens. That passing offense, the speed of Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle with Tua Tagovailoa was certainly on display yesterday.
And they caught me napping because I tweeted out to the Miami Dolphins when they were down 28-7. Great job. Short week of preparation. Where's Mike McDaniel now? No game plan, nothing, right? They had me eating my words in the fourth quarter. I had to take back and apologize to Tua in the Miami offense. I mean, that was a dynamic performance. Again, Lamar Jackson was lights out, not just through the air, but on the ground with the big touchdown run. Miami showed the mental resolve, and that goes to Tua in terms of leading this comeback. But what about the secondary of Baltimore, right? Again, we thought this defense would be much improved. They showed that they were in terms of week one against the New York Jets, but that secondary was a weak point of that defense last year. If they're going to play like that, especially with a 21-point lead, I'm not so sure that Baltimore is a front runner for the division for that matter, and you got to keep an eye out for this team in terms of defensive implosion. I mean, that's ridiculous how they let that lead slip yesterday.
The Ravens were the worst pass defense in the National Football League last year by a pretty substantial margin. But the thought, Joe, was that they were so injured, so banged up in that secondary a season ago with everybody healthy and the addition of Kyle Hamilton, that wouldn't be the case moving forward. Well, it reared its ugly head yesterday. There were times, Joe, I know Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle are incredibly fast, but there were times that you weren't even seeing a Baltimore Ravens defender on the screen with where Tyreek Hill was and where Jalen Waddle was in getting as open as they did. Both players, Joe, have 11 receptions, Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, both over 170 yards. Both have 2 touchdown grabs, including the game winner to Jalen Waddle with just about 17 seconds left, Joe. Jalen Waddle was targeted 19 times by Tua Tagovailoa, his former Alabama teammate. And Tua, Joe, throwing over 400 yards for the first time in his NFL career, finishing 36-50, 469, 6 touchdown passes, tying a Dolphins franchise record. Now Miami, Lisey, is a perfect 2-0 this season, a huge upset victory, winning outright as a 3.5-point underdog. And Lisey, the Dolphins are a minus 220 favorite to make the AFC postseason. They have really carved their way here into a competitive AFC with the 6th-best odds now to win the conference championship.
Yeah, if the offense is going to play like that, they're going to be in each and every ballgame. Obviously, the concern, if you're looking at the gauge or the resume, is how can they can match up against the Buffalo Bills in the interior? Can they shut down the run? They couldn't do it with Lamar Jackson yesterday. They're not going to be able to have that type of performance going up against a physical offensive line in Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills. So that is the long-term view, whether they can actually challenge for an AFC East title. But they're going to be in the mix. I mean, when you could come from behind from 21 points and you're going to allow, I mean, Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, 22 receptions for over 300 yards receiving in one game. I mean, nothing is out of the realm of possibility. I think that's the biggest thing. Tua feels like he's the leader of this offense. The players have bought in, and obviously Mike McDaniel is dialing things up in a perfect way through two games. If he continues that type of success and mismatches, they're going to be there for an AFC wild card appearance at the very least.
Miami has a very difficult test at home, however, as a 4.5-point underdog currently against Buffalo this upcoming weekend. Lamar Jackson was sensational, 21 of 29 through the air, 318 yards, three touchdowns there, and also ran it, Joe, 9 times for a 119, including a 79-yard touchdown sprint. And despite all of that, the Dolphins find a way to win because of that aggressive offensive aerial attack. As we continue going through some of the crazy, Joe, last year in 2021, there was never a game where a team was down by 20 or more points at any point in the contest and came back to win. Yesterday, we saw two. The Dolphins being down by 21 in the fourth quarter against the Ravens, and the Cardinals, Joe, down 20-0 in the third quarter, shut out in the first half against the Raiders, storm all the way back to win in overtime, 29-23, outright as a 5.5-point underdog.
How much time did they give Kyler Murray on the two-point conversion, the touchdown, 16 seconds? I mean, that front seven for Las Vegas was ridiculous. And I thought Josh McDaniels took his foot off the pedal. I mean, after being up basically by 16 points, they didn't show like they wanted to score at all in the second half of that ballgame. Unbelievable performance by Kyler Murray in the fourth quarter.
Not just down 20-0 at the break and into the third quarter, down 23-7 in the fourth quarter. They win it in the extra session. Isaiah Simmons absolutely bodies Hunter Renfrow, forcing a fumble that is scooped and scored by Byron Murphy. Arizona wins outright as a 5.5-point underdog. More FFC up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We are back on FFC, and as you heard there in the highlight clip from the Niners game yesterday against the Seattle Seahawks, it wasn't Trey Lance throwing a touchdown pass, it was Jimmy Garoppolo. Lisi, that's where we'll start this segment, looking at teams that lost week number one, some in disappointing fashion, looking for that bounce back opportunity yesterday. And the Niners, the Packers, the Bengals, the Broncos, and the Rams, Joe, all lost week number one, and were favored by a touchdown or more in week number two. The Niners take care of business against the Seattle Seahawks. They win 27-7. They cover as an 8.5-point home favorite. The defense steps up, but Joe, the story of the game, Trey Lance going down early in that first half. He has fractured his ankle. He will have season-ending surgery here very soon. A very tough break for the Niners, for Trey Lance, really everybody involved in only the second game of his second year in the league.
And what a decision by John Lynch and Shanahan to keep Jimmy Garoppolo around instead of releasing him or trading him to another organization, right? If they would have been all in with Trey Lance, they would not have a backup plan in terms of outside of Brock Purdy or some of the other quarterbacks that are on their practice roster, right? So this was big for San Francisco. I think now they are a contender just because Garoppolo is a team leader. He's gotten his team to an NFC Championship and Super Bowl appearance. You saw the teammates yesterday congratulating him, Deebo Samuel. Everybody's buying in to his leadership skills, and they believe they can go back to the NFC Championship. We have to see how it plays out. Can they have those explosive chunk plays over the top in terms of the passing game? But as long as the running game is good, they're going to be there. And here's the other factor about why they dominated Seattle yesterday. I understand, you know, they jumped out early 7-0, but with Seattle, where was the run game? I mean, Kenneth Walker and Rashad Penny basically got, 12 touches between them? They put all of their eggs in terms of Geno Smith and the passing attack with short to intermediate throws. San Francisco ran away with that one. It was a little bit of both, Garoppolo and then obviously the offensive game plan for Seattle yesterday.
It's such an interesting discussion around Jimmy Garoppolo and the Niners now, Joe, because we're pretty much where we were exactly at this point last year. And for all of the offseason and even those final couple of weeks leading us in to the 2022 NFL regular season, the San Francisco 49ers have moved on from Jimmy Garoppolo. They were unable to trade him, Joe, and the market wasn't all that robust for his services, so they bring him back with some trade clauses and such in there to still try to keep him a lucrative point, where if a quarterback goes down, Jimmy Garoppolo might be able to fill in. I don't think they were anticipating, certainly not hoping, it would be within their own organization. Because we're pretty much in the same spot now, Joe, and it's going to be deja vu when we get here next year. They're still going to invest in Trey Lance, as they already have. He is the future of their franchise. I think he makes them a more dynamic offense under the mastermind that is Kyle Shanahan. But this is not a discredit of Jimmy Garoppolo. Because the Niners, in two of the last 3 years, Joe, have made a Super Bowl and appeared in two of those three NFC Championship games. That is what they have done with Jimmy Garoppolo. Maybe not because of Jimmy G and his talent, but he's brought them to those stages. The NFC Championship last year on the brink of another Super Bowl appearance, and the NFC title game, of course, and a Super Bowl appearance in 2019 against the Kansas City Chiefs. They can win with Jimmy, Joe, and that's why they're odds are still as positive as they are from a season outlook. If you were to lose a starting quarterback for the rest of the year, normally your market would move back like crazy. Joe, they're plus 165 to win the NFC West. They're only 40 cents behind the Rams, and their odds have gotten better from where they were a week ago.
Yeah, absolutely, right? Because of the question marks surrounding what does Trey Lance give you? Now those are gone, right? Now it's just Jimmy Garoppolo. What you see is what you get, and you know that as long as he's clean and plays clean with the football, they're going to be in contention in terms of winning ball games because of his game experience. Here's the bigger question, though. What if Jimmy G comes out, they win a division title, they go to the NFC Championship, or let's take it a step further, they go to the Super Bowl. What happens then? Now you have a quarterback that took your team to potentially two Super Bowls and an NFC Championship and an unproven commodity in Trey Lance that you reached up and grabbed with the third overall selection last year. What do you do then in that type of situation, and what message does that send to the teammates around them?
It's a great question, Joe. The Niners right now are minus 188 to the yes to make the playoffs. They are favored heavily at nearly $2 to make the postseason. There is an expectation, Joe, they will have the opportunity to reach another NFC Championship game, to get possibly to another Super Bowl. Because that would tell me, Lisi, as much as we think Trey Lance can elevate this team, and I guess it would be the conversation is what is the Niners' ceiling, is Jimmy Garoppolo. And the San Francisco 49ers, if they were to do what you said, win a division potentially, or at least make a run in the postseason to another NFC Championship game, that means the Niners have been in the NFC title game 3 or 4 years. That is as consistent pretty much as you could hope for. Now, it's about winning that conference championship, which they did in 2019, and then ultimately hoisting the Lombardi Trophy, because I think that's the expectation now for San Francisco. So, Joe, maybe the conversation would be if Jimmy gets them to that point but can't get them over the hump, is that the benefit of Trey Lance? That would be what I would surmise San Francisco probably thinks, but how can you knock a guy from bringing you to the brink of being one of the four best teams in football on any given year, potentially one of the best two teams in football each and every year, and then tell them, hey, we're still going to go with this rookie or third-year player at that point, but we would only seen Trey Lance start four games.
Yeah, I don't know. It is going to be very interesting. I mean, obviously, that's a discussion in the offseason, Ben. We're going to have to see how this plays out. There is no discussion if they miss out on the playoffs, right? Because then it's a quick fix. It's a quick argument. There's no reason to keep Garoppolo. Right. But if he succeeds and succeeds well and this team gets over the hump and is right there in the mix challenging the L.A. Rams or whoever's there in terms of the NFC, he's going to have a great argument. And I tell you what, maybe there was no market value for Jimmy G this offseason, he's going to have a ton of market value should he lead this team to an NFC championship at the very least. So we'll see how it plays out. Their win total is going to be obviously now they're going to get over it or have a great shot to get over that preseason number of 9.5 with Jimmy G at the helm.
And again, it is crazy to see your starting quarterback go down after week number two for the rest of the season, and your odds don't really change. They were minus 215, Joe, to make the playoffs before the year. They're minus 188 still. That win total you mentioned at 9.5 had a lot of juice on the over. It's still 9.5 and is still juiced to the over at minus 120. That is a truly fascinating case study about the talent elsewhere, I guess, on this Niners organization, Joe, outside of the quarterback position. Let's stick it in the NFC West, because last week, Lisi, it was only the Seahawks that won a football game, despite the fact the Cardinals, the Rams, and the Niners were all playoff teams a season ago. This week, it's only the Seahawks that lose, because they lose to San Francisco. The Niners cover. The Cardinals win outright in that dramatic comeback in overtime against the Raiders as a 5.5-point underdog. The Rams win, Joe. They beat the Falcons, but they were up 28-3, a very significant score to Atlanta fans and the history of that organization, of course, in the third quarter. And it's Atlanta this time, Joe, flipping the script, coming back and making it a game against the Rams. They had an opportunity after a Cooper Kupp fumble, did Marcus Mariota and the Atlanta Falcons, to go tie the game and potentially win on the road. In fact, it's the Rams that win 31-27, but do not cover, Joe, as a 10.5-point favorite.
Yeah, and Jalen Ramsey seals the deal with a pick in the end zone, right? I mean, come on. I mean, it took 28-3 for the Falcons to wake up, and they ran basically hurry up the whole second half of that ballgame. I mean, Mariota was efficient, and those playmakers got involved. At the end of the day, we know what Atlanta is. Their defense sucks, and their offense isn't bad. When they can run the football, they obviously sustain drives and could put up some points. Now, back-to-back games through 2 weeks where they put up over 21 points, right? So we thought this team would be bad, but offensively, they're getting overs, and that's really all that matters right now. So that might be a trend to look at in terms of the Atlanta Falcons. Even if they don't win, maybe you look to the Falcons in terms of betting overs the rest of the regular season.
We'll have to see. It's a great point, Joe. Two overs now because of the fact these games with Atlanta have been incredibly exciting. Now, listen, the Falcons find spectacular ways to lose a football game. We saw that at home last week against the Saints when it was Atlanta up 26-10 in the fourth quarter, and New Orleans came back to win 27-26. This week, they're the ones that almost come from behind, Joe, and they make it a football game late, 28-3. If you had a Rams team total, you're feeling great. If you had the under of the game, Lisi, you're probably feeling okay because the Falcons looked dead. And then they figured something out with Mariota. This offense has been very good, despite the fact Kyle Pitts has not really been used at all this year. So that combination of Mariota, the familiarity with his former OC, now head coach in Arthur Smith, something is working there, Joe. And here's what we can say about the Dirty Birds as well. Last year, one of the worst cover percentages in the NFL when booked as an underdog, just 3-7-1 against the spread as a dog. This year, a perfect 2-0 against the spread as an underdog. Lisi, we'll go to some more around the NFL as we start off our next segment before flipping it over to college football, because a ton to break down there as well. I want to hear your thoughts, though, Joe, about the Denver Broncos, and we'll get to that on the other side of the break, because Denver wins at home yesterday in Russ's home debut, 13-6 in the Mile High City, but they do not even come close to covering as a 9.5-point favorite against the Texans. Plenty more discussion up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
There is nobody better than Kevin Harlan to call a come-from-behind wild game, Joe, as we get back here on Football Full Circle. When my alma mater, Lisi, the Syracuse Orange, came back from a bunch in the NCAA tournament against Virginia, he said, because the game took place on Easter Sunday, Jim Boeheim and Syracuse back from the dead on Easter Sunday to beat Virginia. Now that is quite a good call. As we continue to go around the NFL week number two, a weekend in review here on FFC before we flip it over to what happened on the Saturday slate, week number three of college football. Lisi, as we were coming up on the break, we started our conversation about the Denver Broncos. Now, the Broncos were booked as a 9.5-point home favorite in Russell Wilson's home debut in the Mile High City. They were hosting the Houston Texans, a 9.5-point favorite to figure it out after the embarrassing road loss against the Seattle Seahawks the first Monday night of the year, where Nathaniel Hackett completely mismanaged the game and once again, Joe, Nathaniel Hackett doesn't really seem to know what to do when it comes to coaching football games. The offense looks incredibly sluggish, and Nathaniel Hackett was the OC mind with the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers the past 3 years. And the Broncos ultimately win, Joe, but they were trailing at home to the Houston Texans in the fourth quarter before they come back, I guess you could say, to win 16-9, but they come nowhere close to covering a 9.5-point spread.
Yeah, and think about this. Third down conversions yesterday for Denver, 3 of 12 with Russell Wilson at the helm. That's absolutely pathetic when you think about the success that he had in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers. Just unbelievable. Only 200 yards passing. And every throw, Ben, excuse me, is short to intermediate. There's no explosive plays over the top. No. They're not challenging defenses vertically with Jerry Jeudy and those playmakers. So, big picture, do we really think they could go toe-to-toe with Kansas City and Pat Mahomes at this standpoint? L.A., if Justin Herbert is 100% healthy with that passing attack, and even Las Vegas with Waller, Renfro, and Davante Adams? Absolutely not. They look like the worst offense right now in their own division in terms of the AFC West. And even with Russell Wilson at the helm, I'm not sure they're a playoff team this year.
Russ certainly is not cooking at the moment, Joe Lisi. He is 14 of 31, was he yesterday, for 219, a touchdown and one interception. Just ran it twice for 3 yards. So when we talk about playoffs, the Denver Broncos are plus 340 right now to win the AFC West. Their odds right before the season started, plus 260. They moved back to plus 370 following the loss last Monday night in Seattle against the Seahawks. But Lisi, they were minus 146 for the Broncos to make the postseason. Now they are plus 110. A lot of those teams, Joe, in the AFC, we expected to be competitive. The Broncos, the Chargers still should be, but the Broncos, the Ravens, the Bengals, all of these teams we thought were going to make the AFC that difficult, really haven't so far. It's the Bills, it's the Chiefs, it's maybe the Chargers if Justin Herbert's rib fracture isn't all that bad, and maybe it's the Dolphins because the Ravens showed a little bit of leakage yesterday. The Bengals, Joe, what is happening to Cincinnati? They are now 0-2 as they lose outright yesterday to Cooper Rush and the Dallas Cowboys as a 7.5-point favorite. Joe Burrow, at least he sacked 6 times again yesterday. That offense looks out of sorts. They're down double digits trying to muster up a comeback, which they made both games competitive so far against the Steelers and the Cowboys, Joe, but ultimately they have started off winless.
Weren't they supposed to address the offensive line in terms of free agency and the draft?
They did.
And we thought, I know, well, but 13 sacks.
They did. Right.
13 sacks through, that's 6.5 per game. At this rate, Joe Burrow's not going to make it to 17 games. Are you kidding me? He gets hit like this. I mean, we thought the performance in the playoff games where he stepped up and got sacked, 9 times against Tennessee? We thought it was just an aberration for that. Nah, there's no way Joe Burrow could have sacked that much. All of a sudden, he's on his ass every single play. It's amazing. At the end of the day, I still am a buyer of this offense. I'm not that much of a buyer of Zach Taylor. I never was. But at the end of the day, he did get the team to the Super Bowl, so you have to give him the benefit of the doubt. But Joe Burrow needs to cook. Week 3 is a very important game for them. They need to start fast. If they fall behind again, and that's their MO, they're not going to make it to the playoffs this year. They need to change things immediately, and it needs to be with the rushing attack with Joe Mixon. They can work off of play action, and that offensive line needs to find some answers.
Lisi, it's a very disappointing thing for me personally because a lot of people were looking at the Bengals this year and said, yes, last year they far exceeded expectation. They were a team that had a 6.5 win total. They were a team that entered the season with the third longest odds to win a Super Bowl. And despite the fact they got to the Super Bowl and looked like this great young core, they had so exceeded expectations, they had to regress negatively back to the mean. And I said, why? Why do we look at them like that? Why don't we look at a young, talented roster that did better than we expected, but it's only the start and they're going to continue to keep that level of success, maybe even improving? And so far, it looks like the one side that said the Bengals, who made the playoff, who won a playoff game for the first time in more than three decades last year, were going to come back to the mean. It seems like that side, as of right now, for that argument, is off to the better start. Cincinnati, at the moment, the second best odds in the AFC North, but plus 150 to make the postseason now in the AFC. Lisi, a bad day for the AFC North as all four teams lose. That Steelers offense looks atrocious. The offensive line for Pittsburgh is bad. They lose to New England in the debut of Acrisure Stadium this year in the regular season for the Steelers, 17-14, a game that stayed well under. One final game, Joe, to discuss here before we flip it over to college football. We talked about this last week leading into the game, how Duval County, Jacksonville, Florida, is a house of horrors for the Indianapolis Colts. That extends on Sunday against Jacksonville. The Jags shut out Indy, who has now lost 8 straight games, Joe, against their divisional opponent in Jacksonville. Something about playing in Duval County for Indianapolis, Joe, means a certain loss. Jacksonville wins outright as a 3-point home underdog, 24-zip.
Yeah, unbelievable. I mean, I never thought I would see a shutout for the Jacksonville Jaguars against the Colts, right? With that offensive line, Jonathan Taylor, Matty Ice. I mean, how bad was that? Especially since they lost the last regular season game as a 15.5-point favorite. That was why they didn't make the playoffs. You thought they would come in focused into this ballgame. They didn't. And I don't know. Matt Ice, to me, looks old. He looks washed up. Yep. If they can't run the football, they're predictable, long third downs, and guess what? They're pedestrian. I think Jacksonville right now could be headed in the right direction because right now Trevor Lawrence is coming into his own with Doug Peterson. This defense stepped up too, so keep an eye out for them.
They sacked Matt Ryan, did the Jacksonville Jaguars, 5 times in total yesterday, Joe. And Josh Allen, not the Josh Allen that will start tonight at quarterback for the Bills against the Titans, laying 10 points. But the other Josh Allen out of Kentucky continues his impressive start to this season and his NFL career. 2 sacks yesterday against the Colts. And now, Joe, every team in the AFC South is plus money to win the division. And only Jacksonville at this point has won a football game. Tennessee can potentially join them with a 1 in the win column, but they're a 10-point underdog on the road tonight against Buffalo. All right, Joe, let's flip it over to college football. We'll give you some Monday Night Football picks before we get out of here in just a few minutes as well. Let's go college football, Joe. Week number 3, the Saturday slate. The national championship favorites, the teams that are ranked 1-6 in the AP poll, they all pretty much held serve on Saturday, Joe. Georgia dominant once again. They beat South Carolina 49-7. That offense for UGA is spectacular. Alabama takes easy work of UL Monroe. Ohio State scores 77 points. USC was dominant, Joe, late night in Los Angeles against Fresno State in a game we both thought would be way more competitive than it was. And Clemson gets a win before a very big test against Wake Forest this upcoming Saturday. So as we go elsewhere around college football, Joe, what stood out to you the most?
The physicality of the Penn State offensive line and wearing down an SEC front in terms of Auburn, the way Singleton, yeah, Allen, Lee, the way they ran on the front 7 of Auburn in dominating fashion, I mean, it was unbelievable. I think Penn State is a contender in the Big Ten. You think about Ohio State, you think about Michigan, not just the rushing attack, but it is Sean Clifford leading that offense, and that front 7 got to TJ Finley, they got to Robbie Ashford a number of times. Keep an eye out for James Franklin and the crew as they navigate this week through Central Michigan, hopefully, and then more importantly, the Big Ten schedule, because they're going to be there every step of the way. They're not going to be catching 19 points if they're undefeated at home against Ohio State on October 29th.
Listen, Lisi, I was pretty high on this Penn State crew coming in based on the idea that their running back room was going to be one of the best in the Big Ten Conference. If they could run the football more consistently under Mike Yurcich with Sean Clifford taking some of the onus off of Clifford, they were going to be a really good team because of the talent they brought back defensively, certainly in the secondary with Joey Porter Jr. leading the way, P.J. Mustafa up front, and they are called linebacker U for a freaking reason there in State College as well. I wasn't so concerned about that side of the football. And so far this year, Joe, they have run the football with incredible success. 245 on 39 carries as a team against Auburn. And they limited Tank Bigsby, Joe, to only 39 on the ground. Jarquez Hunter, only 16 yards. Nicholas Singleton, Nick Singleton, the big play threat that he is, Lisey. 10 carries, 179 yards and a touchdown 2 weeks ago against Ohio. 10 carries again, Joe, and still a double-digit yard per carry average. 10 for 124 and two scores. His longest was 54 yards. He is a big play, game-breaking threat every time he gets the football, and we have seen that. Penn State wallops Auburn on the Plains, 41-12, easily covering as a 2.5-point favorite. And because of that, Joe, Penn State is now ranked 14th in the country. A very impressive start for James Franklin and the Nittany Lions. Joe, one thing that stood out to me on Saturday in one of the ranked matchups that we had, top 25 versus top 25, Oregon looked really good. And they made BYU play their game. And the Ducks ended up winning 41-20, easily covering as a 3.5-point favorite. Made me eat my words, Joe. I thought BYU was the right side. I thought BYU would bring some of that physicality. I thought they would expose Oregon's defense. That did not happen. Oregon, who was dominated by UGA 49-3 the opening Saturday of the year, Joe, looked really good this past Saturday with a 41-20 victory.
They did it, and Bo Nix bounced back in a big way. Accounted for four touchdowns in the first half. The way they were able to run the football, they didn't have to do a whole lot off of play action, and they jumped out to a big lead. I mean, Jaren Hall tried to lead the comeback and just didn't have enough in the tank, and it looked like BYU was just emotionally drained from the double overtime win over Baylor. Now they have a chance to regroup. Oregon, yeah, maybe they can be a contender if they play like that in terms of the Pac-12 going up against teams like maybe UCLA. LA and obviously Utah in terms of the division. That's always possible. We'll see how it plays out because I'm still not sold in terms of Bo Nix as a whole. Had a very good game, but we'll see how it plays out in Eugene.
We'll talk about another team from the Pacific Northwest region in the Pac-12. Washington, Joe, absolutely spanking Michigan State on Saturday night, late night out there in Seattle. That offensive attack between Caleb DeBoer and Michael Penix Jr., reuniting now in Seattle, looks to be really good. 397, four touchdowns for Penix Jr. We'll continue on FFC up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Just a few more minutes left here on Football Full Circle. A special Monday Night Football edition of a doubleheader tonight to end out week number two. Two more games left of week two. First in Buffalo, the Bills' home opener this weekend, Joe Lisi. They are a 10-point favorite against the Tennessee Titans with a total at 47.5. The second game of the night, Philadelphia at home, the Eagles hosting the Vikings, a much tighter spread, 2.5 only in favor of Philly, with a total that has come down to around 48 in a hook at this moment. Lisi, as you think about your best bet or an area you are looking for this Monday night doubleheader, what draws your attention?
Yeah, I'm going to take the Titans. I think they keep it within the number. They always play the Bills tough, and I like the underdog as well in terms of the Vikings. I think they're the best team in terms of their division this year. I like the over in that game, and I like Dalvin Cook over 19.5 receiving yards at minus 106.
That's a nice way to look at that secondary market for Dalvin Cook. You're an underdog guy, Lisi, through and through. Here is two things I will say. One about each game from the prop perspective. We are not sure if Gabe Davis is going to play tonight for Buffalo. Injured his ankle at practice on Saturday afternoon. If he does not, look at Isaiah McKenzie and his anytime touchdown prop right now at plus 160. He doesn't have receiving yardage or reception props up just yet. And then for the other game, game, Joe, I look at Jalen Hurts utilizing his legs. The Eagles were the top rushing offense in the league a season ago. They ran it 39 times in week number one against the Lions, tied for the most around the league in the opening weekend of action. And Jalen Hurts himself, Joe, had 90 yards on the ground. His rushing yards prop is 51 in the hook. It's a number he went over 8 times as well last season. That would be my area of attack from the prop perspective for both of these games. A Monday night doubleheader that we will break down tomorrow on Football Full Circle. Joe Lisi, always a pleasure, my friend. I am Ben Stevens. FFC is done for today. We'll be back tomorrow, recapping week 2 in full and setting the stage for the week to come. The Money Line on Sports Grid Radio is up next.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.